and assure success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand. Divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me. You're the sweetest honey from the honeybee. Unity, unity, please don't desert me. We need your sweetness like the core of the honeybee. So please,
oh, please hear my plea. Yeah. Ladies and gents, those of you living in the tent cities outside of LA and Las Vegas, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Wireless broadband is certainly coming in handy out there, isn't it? Oh, the poverty. Speaking of poverty, you kind of can at some point realize that the United States government, New Zealand government, regardless of whichever government you're talking about, winds up passing laws or enforcing laws that don't exist that make sure that people become morally bankrupt. For example, this headline here at gorillamedia.co.nz, Child Services harass father for feeding organic veggies to kids. Source for the story is Infowars.com, written by Paul Joseph Watson. Father of two was harassed and investigated by Child Protective Services and police for feeding his daughters organic food, refusing to make them drink fluoride poison tap water, and not having them injected with mercury-laden vaccines, all of which constitutes, quote-unquote, suspicious activity in the new Sovietized America, a foretaste of what's to come once Big Sis Walmart spy campaign gets up and running. And that's the if you see something, say something, the American Stasi will be born. And I'm sure that everything that's happening right there, right now, has either already begun or is being talked about being implemented elsewhere. Wherever you are living, it's coming to you. I can assure you. So it is without question that we must be totally vigilant and watch over our governments and ensure that we do not forget who the biggest killers in the 20th century were. They were people's own governments. Do not forget that, because they're counting on you to forget it.
So that's over now, Vinny, though. That's over now. I just want to watch the Kardashians and eat popcorn. That's all history, Vinny. Stop obsessing in history.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's old. It doesn't matter anymore. You know, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. And I think it's hold on a second. And those who are taught by nothing but repetition are also doomed to repeat it as well.
You know how we're always saying the public's retarded? Well, I had a reality check last night and realized they're even more retarded than I
previously thought.
Have you seen the show The Kardashians? I mean, if that can get top ratings in America, I mean, what the hell is going on? What the hell is wrong with people?
We're living in a global retard commune. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll be right back, folks.
Don't sit around.
follow the light. Wee bit of sub-focus there for those of you who are into your dancity music. We have a very special guest for you today, ladies and gentlemen. His name is the Reverend Ted Pike from truthtellers.org, an independent reporter, researcher, and of course a reverend, has decided to come on our show today at our request to tell us a little bit about his most recent article, 50 Top Israeli Rabbis Proud to Be Racists. If you go to truthtellers.org and have a look for that one, you will see it right there. Reverend, are you on the line there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the show. We're very proud to have you on.
Well, thank you. Is this Vinny I'm talking to?
Indeedy doody.
And this is Will. Hi, Ted.
Okay, Will. Glad to get to know you.
Okay, now let's break it down. I mean, because as far as I'm concerned, I mean, in this country, I've attended a fair few protests against Israel, and I've seen many people get arrested, and I've seen protesters sometimes throwing shoes at the Israeli and American embassies down here in New Zealand. And quite frankly, despite the fact that there is a lot of protests against the apartheid sort of practices of Israel, you know, kicking Palestinians off land that they're on and building settlements with barbed wire and whatnot around them, why exactly are the rabbis now basically coming out in the open and saying, yes, we're racist, yes, we're Nazis, yes, we want to exterminate the Arabs? What's going on here?
Well, there's really been a kind of a rash of top rabbis in Israel over the last 3 or 4 months who have been speaking very boldly largely to the Orthodox audience, the Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox factions of Israeli society, saying, we've had it with these Arabs. We have it's time now to fulfill the biblical mandate given to Abraham in the book of Genesis, saying the whole land belongs to the Jews, and it's time actually to talk about moving the Arabs out, recovering the Dome of the Rock, preparing for grander things such as a Jewish temple and an entirely Jewish state. And of course, this is very much at odds with the so-called peace process. But what I point out in this article is that this racism, this feeling that the Jewish people are ethnically, religiously, spiritually, even perhaps intellectually superior to the Goyim or the Gentiles, is something that goes way back into Jewish history. And it goes back, I point out, to the scribes and the Pharisees, who basically revolutionized the old Hebrew religion, bringing in a very blatant, very sinister, vicious racism, which caused the Jews to view themselves as superior to the Gentiles and even destined to rule the nation someday.
And indeed, there is a, shall I say, it's happening even on the ground level. These rabbis are even saying that any Jew who, and Jews aren't a race, they're a religion, and people get confused. Zionists are not a religion, nor are they a race. Zionists are a political belief structure. Jews are not a political belief structure, and they're not a race. They're a religion. And Semites are not a religion and not a political structure. They're a race, right? And nobody seems to understand this. They think they're all just one kettle of fish. I mean, true, they're very, very interrelated, but they don't seem to realize that there is a difference between these kind of things. I mean, if you are against Zionism, they think that you're an anti-Semitic, which is totally not true. I mean, I'm anti-Zionist, but I think Semitic peoples have a right to exist wherever the heck they want to without being persecuted, much like everybody else in the world should be. But, however, the reason why I disagree with Zionism is for these particular reasons itself, is that they are, in at their very, very core, admittedly by top rabbis and indeed from Zionist insiders, that they're basically basically fascism.
The basis in which I create judgments and opinions about modern Israel is not necessarily on political developments, even over the last century, or the back and forth that goes on in the Middle East. But as a Christian, I stand upon the foundational statements which I believe God made in the Mosaic Law in dozens of instances, which says that the Hebrews or the Jewish people cannot occupy a holy land, and a land dedicated by God to holiness and righteousness and justice and mercy, except by doing the righteous works of faith which their father Abraham did. In other words, it's a conditional covenant based upon obedience. And God is very specific about this. Yahweh says repeatedly that the Jews cannot come in as a nation without obedience. They cannot stay there, but they will be exiled to the nations. And so, regardless of how you define modern or rabbinic Judaism or Zionism or these political and religious movements over the last 100 years or even the last several millennia, the fact remains that the scriptures are clear that whatever is going on there is spiritually illegal. And, of course, the United Nations and other human rights groups would say there's a lot more that's illegal about what's going on in Israel. But foundationally, what I believe is that this is a counterfeit return. It is not the sublime fulfillment of the hundreds of prophecies in the Old Testament which talk about a return of the Jews to Palestine in the last days. In fact, what I believe is that it's the precursor to a system, an antichrist system of world control, financial, media, political, military, economic control of the world. And I'm agreed with that by these many of these very very Orthodox rabbis who believe that Israel is not condemned to perpetually just be fighting back and forth with the Arabs, but that the time will come when Israel will ascend to dominance in the Middle East, will receive and discover her true Messiah, and certainly Arabs will be banned even from stepping inside of the land. They will be allowed to rebuild their temple and have the messianic theocracy that they've always dreamed of.
So, Ted, I mean, you're probably the best person out there to ask, and there's a lot of confusion. Do you believe they are genuinely trying to bring about, they being the political Zionists and their supporters? I mean, a lot of people argue that the Zionists aren't just those people who are commonly referred to in Israel, that they are essentially the New World Order. I think I'd like you to clarify that one also. But do you think they're trying to bring about this final battle against the kings of the East at Megiddo?
Well, the Battle of Armageddon in the Valley of Megiddo is not a battle between the kings of the East or between any kings. Basically, it's a big shootout between Jesus Christ, who returns in the heavens and causes fire and brimstone and wrath to fall upon the Antichrist, that is the beast, and his false prophet, and all of the millions of people who follow him in attempting to exterminate the Jews. You see, basically my eschatology basically says that, as I said, this what we're witnessing here right now is not the second return of the Jews to Palestine. It is actually a counterfeit return. It will succeed for a period of time in defiance of God's law. The Jews will dominate the nations eventually someday, and they will receive their Antichrist, the man of sin. And yet, this great world system of commercial and political bondage called the Great Harlot Israel or Babylon the Great, which rides upon the beast or the seven-headed, ten-horned beast, but the beast will rear on his haunches. He will throw the harlot to the ground. He will gore her and burn her with fire. You can read all about that in Revelation 17 and 18. In other words, there's going to be a tremendous reversal someday in the fortunes of the modern state of Israel as the Antichrist, the beast, and all the nations, including the Palestinians and all the Arabs, overrun Israel and desolate the great harlot Israel and expel kill two-thirds of the Jews and expel at least a third of them to the nations and actually try to exterminate all Jews from the earth. You see, this anger against Israel in the Middle East, this anger, even this developing in the world today against Israel, will heighten regardless of how Israel dominates the future political and geopolitical scene. And someday tremendous wrath and revenge will be taken against the Jews, not only for the present injustices in the Middle East, but actually for making vassals out of the nations in this new world order of the future. And the Scripture says, however, according to my interpretation, that just about when the Jews, the last remnant Jews, have been exterminated from the earth, Jesus Christ, the true Messiah of the Jews, the rejected, the lover and spiritual husband of Israel, will return in the heavens in glory and power, and he will pour down tremendous wrath in the battle of Armageddon, in the Valley of Megiddo, against the Antichrist and all of his hordes, which will include the kings of East, probably the Chinese, and everyone who's come to destroy the Jewish race. And he will receive a remnant of believing Jews and restore them to a place of protection in Palestine and rule there for 1,000 years. So it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, me personally, I'm not religious. I mean, I was raised Catholic, but now I don't really subscribe to any particular religion. But what I do find about people of religious denominations, particularly Christians and people like that, is that they have a thing called morality, which seems to be being usurped away from the general public faster and faster at an ever-increasing rate. What part does that have to play in our modern society, the taking away of people's general morality?
Well, the whole purpose of the Talmudic and the Kabbalistic animus against the Gentiles and against Christians, this racism we're talking about here, it says that these goyim, or these Gentiles, have brought the whole world into confusion, and it is the duty of every Jew to repair the world in the sense of undoing the belief in three gods, the Trinity, the false gods of and the vanity of the nations, by restoring Jewish monotheism to the world. And that is the great ambition of Orthodox or Rabbinic Judaism, is to bring the whole world under the Noahide laws and under the precepts of a monotheistic, truly monotheistic Judaic world system of governance that is centered in Jerusalem. Now, there is a very dark side to this conviction of the superiority of the Jews and the inferiority of the Gentiles, in that many Jews over the millennia have believed that literally anything that's necessary to tear down the barriers to Jewish control, meaning the Christian morality you're talking about, capitalism, free enterprise system, all this civilization, they believe, has to be torn down first because it's such a huge obstacle to Jewish advancement. Therefore, we see Jewish radical supremacist organizations like the Anti-Defamation League and B'nai B'rith International and Southern Poverty Law Center and the American Civil Liberties Union. We find all of them working tirelessly to promote anti-Christian initiatives such as homosexuality, tearing down the Christmas symbols and the crosses in public and the public symbols and representations of Christian culture in the Western nations. And many people ask me, they say, well, why are these Jewish organizations so interested in promoting homosexuality? Well, it's because historically homosexuality has proven to be very effective, formidably effective in tearing down the family, the home, the birth rate, the morals, even the health standards with AIDS and so on of society. And so it's necessary for the sinister interpreters of the Talmud and the Kabbalah to promote even political movements such as socialism and communism, Bolshevism, liberalism, secular humanism, the theory of evolution, all of these things that strip Western Christian society of its belief in a God of love and justice.
And very deep there, Ted. I totally agree. I totally agree. And the thing is, you need more than a month of Sundays to convince anyone these days on any particular one of those issues. It's so far afield now. I saw a 2020 program last night where two cousins have married each other. And they're saying, well, there's nothing wrong with that. People used to look upon gays as if they were doing something wrong, and now that's commonplace. You see, once you set a pretext, a precedent in motion, these relativist nihilist types just point at them as their only reference points, historical reference points for righteousness.
That's right. And once your precepts or your premises of society, the values that govern social behavior and interaction and morals and so on are twisted and inverted, then all kinds of deductions result from that, resulting in all kinds of perverse conclusions. So it's very important that society rests upon values, principles, and precepts that are logical, straightforward, moral, biblical, and so on. Now, the Anti-Defamation League is at the root of hate crimes laws worldwide, but especially in the Western world. And ADL, especially during this last year, after they successfully masterminded the passage of the U.S. federal hate crimes bill, ADL has been very vocal in boasting that it is basically the mainspring, the author of hate crimes laws worldwide, as well as 45 U.S. state hate laws. What ADL specializes in doing is to take the most fundamental values and terms of civilization, such as tolerance, love, hate, bias, and things like that, and turn everything upside down. So ADL makes any kind of Christian bias against homosexuality, turns that into hate, takes Christian love and says, well, you should love.
That's right, and it sounds a lot like political correctness, which in my opinion, the only reason that exists is to stop people from saying what they truly think. Our very special guest is the Reverend Ted Pike, and we'll be back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop, and it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison, just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command, because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust.
Welcome back to the Deadly Serious The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. If you like the show and you have a website of yours, flick us an email to producer@thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and we'll send you a banner so you can link in. Now, our very special guest that we unfortunately rudely had to cut off as we were coming into the break is the Reverend Ted Pike. Ted, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Mm-mm-mm. Now, I'm sorry, what were you talking about before we went into break there?
What was I talking about? You'll have to remind me.
Well, you were getting pretty heavy into everything from homosexuality to evolution to hate
speech.
That's
right. I was talking about how the ADL specializes in inverting and turning upside down all of the most fundamental and cherished values of our civilization. For example, it takes criticism of homosexuality, which is rooted firmly even in the Jewish Old Testament, saying that homosexuality is an abomination. It turns that into hate. It says it's bias, and that bias is evil, and bias is hate. And therefore, those who believe what the Bible says become haters. And in countries, some countries like Canada and others, under hate laws which have been created by ADL, just to speak what is called hate speech or biblical hate speech, homophobic hate speech, etc., in criticism of homosexuality in the public forum, on the airwaves, from the pulpit, and so on, is an indictable hate crime. Up in Canada, if you criticize homosexuality on the air, if you even say that homosexuals have a higher rate of AIDS than the rest of the population, you can be indicted in Canada as a hate criminal, and the station that put you on and allowed you to say that can lose their broadcast license. You see, so what's going on here? We're talking about this impulse of Jewish supremacism to use anything it can do to create chaos and disunity and problems and strife in society. The ADL specializes in doing that, and it seems that that's in contradiction to the sublime morals of the Old Testament and the Bible and so on. But actually, there's a hidden agenda here of posturing as Jews, even as religious Jews, for some supremacist Jews, but at the same time doing absolutely everything they can to tear down the Christian civilization that has given Jews so much peace and refuge and prosperity, especially during the last century.
We just want to make clear to the audience that when you refer to these Jews, we're talking about an elite here. We're not talking about the average person. We're not preaching hate towards an entire people or anything that it may be interpreted. Because people want to interpret things broad brush all the time. They don't want to get into the details and understand the historical differences and the points we're trying to make here. And when you talk about the theory of evolution, never is that more clear. You know, most people have got no idea of even the statistical probability. You don't want to talk God, fine. But if you want to talk science, the statistical likelihood of even a protein, let alone a DNA strand, double helix coming together by chance, but even a protein that makes up a peptide bond coming together by chance over 4.5 billion years is so improbable. It's more than there are grains of sand on the earth. I mean, something like 10 to the power of 23 is in the order of something like 10.
You see, ADL is now demonizing creationists. It's demanding that there be no hint of a creationist alternative in the public school system in America. It's on the attack against conscious design, anything like that returns basically to a Judaic value system, which was pioneered by righteous Jews under the leadership of Yahweh in the Old Testament. So there's a great contradiction here, which is very confusing to most people. And tragically, the evangelicals have led the way. There's something like 70 million evangelicals. Virtually all of them stand behind Israel, right or wrong. And the evangelicals have given unconditional endorsement and blessing upon all Jews, but particularly including these Jewish supremacists. I should mention that when we're talking about Jewish supremacism, we are not talking about all Jews. It's true that organized world Jewry under B'nai B'rith International, which is the parent organization of ADL, has presences in 55 nations of the world. It has enormous, staggering political clout in the governments of those nations, persuading them to enact hate crimes legislation and anti-Christian and pro-homosexual legislation. But nevertheless, secular Judaism or organized Judaism is only a faction of Judaism today. There are Orthodox rabbis, in fact, like Rabbi Daniel Lappin here in the United States, Rabbi Nachum Shifrin, who have been very outspoken against ADL. In fact, Rabbi Lappin has had a toll-free number that any Jew or Gentile or Christian who's being hassled by the ADL can call Rabbi Lappin, and he will go to bat for them. The same way with
what do you think about them attacking people like Alex Jones whilst giving awards to son of SS officer Arnold Schwarzenegger?
In fact, ADL has given spectacular awards to both Hugh Hefner and his daughter as pornographers. There's there's this there's always this double standard as the ADL postures as a high-minded civil rights organization, wanting tolerance and respect for diversity, all these kinds of things. But they
high-minded
this,
meaning they must be on crack. Continue.
Yeah, they always have this hidden agenda, underground agenda of not only being involved with organized crime, but being involved in a very sinister and organized attempt worldwide to bring about the organized persecution of Christians through hate crimes laws.
A lot of people were just like apathetic to the point where they're like, get out of here, you know. Gays are fine, just let them be, let whatever be, you know. But the problem is, it's been said before, gays replicate via recruitment. They can't have kids.
Yes.
Which fundamentally breaks biological laws, even if they believe in evolution. That's the most insane part about it.
Yes.
We see it in plants. We see it in every animal. There are some asexual organisms. Yeah, I'm well aware of that. I know cows turn gay, and especially if you give them hormones and feminize them with estrogen, the cows start turning on steers start turning on each other and things like this. But just because we can cite examples of, I mean, we can cite examples of animals, monkeys cracking each other's skulls and murdering each other. Do we say murder's fine?
Yes.
I mean, but a lot of people just say, let them live, let them be. But the problem is they're actively recruiting. They're feminizing our society out there with what they put in the food and water. And then they're just making it okay to be anything you want. And if you feel certain sexual desires, then enact them. It's all gratification of the senses.
Well, the whole biblical message is that man is not to pattern himself after the beasts. Yes, there's all kinds of beastly behavior in this world by the lower forms of life, but the message of Christianity and of Judaism originally was that man is made in the image of God. We are given an eternal soul, a free will. We are free will moral beings, and we are condemned, if you will, both for good or evil, to live forever because we are made after the pattern of an eternally preexistent being a God Almighty. And that is our premise for life. And the whole purpose of life is to come to know and to understand and become the friend of the one who has so marvelously created you. And you were mentioning the complexities of the simplest protein. Well, the human body, the human mind, and all higher organisms are so staggeringly complex. I have a cousin who is a top-level biochemist and college professor and scientist, and he does not believe in the theory of evolution. That he says that he is in fact a pioneer in vitamin E research, and he says that the complexity and the design and the nuances of staggering profundities of design are almost beyond any kind of intelligence that we can even comprehend. That's the kind of God we are obligated and privileged to find in this world. And the great tragedy for most people is that they go through this life without even realizing that they owe everything, they owe absolutely everything to this God who out of love has given them a short term on life for the privilege of finding him and becoming his friend forever.
Well, now we're getting quite deep, and I just want to ask this one while we're on this theme. It's quite a deep question. There are others out there, Ted, though, who understand this complexity and design to life, and some of those are partnered with B'nai B'rith, such as the Masons, and they understand that there is sacred geometry and there is such design. They understand there's a creator, and then they go out and use people like Darwin 150 years ago to unleash the atheists and nihilists on the world. But what do you think of their take in that we are a complex design, then they use all this geometry and so on to invoke the spirit of what they call the creator?
Say that again. I don't quite thoroughly understand your question.
What I'm saying is, on the other side of the coin, there aren't just atheists, but there are occultists who understand that there is creation and design, but then attempt to tap into some of, you know, if you look at some of the cell structures or just the nature of many leaves. Pence reoccurring. There are some people believe they can crack esoteric codes and start.
I see. Okay. The thing about I got an email just a couple of days ago from a deist, and he wanted to congratulate me and Nathaniel Kapner that he had just heard on Jeff Rentz's program for our what he called a heroic stand against evil and so on. But he says, I'm a deist because Thomas Jefferson was a deist. Well, if you have any conception, any idea of God in which he is remote, he's esoteric, he is beyond thought or beyond feeling or beyond compassion, even beyond intelligence, that's a lot of confusion. And what the message that came down at Mount Sinai to the Hebrews, the message that came down from heaven through Jesus of Nazareth is that God is, of course, he's all of this kind of transcendence. He is beyond everything we can imagine, but he is also a personal God. He is an intelligence that loves us. He is a sculptor and a painter and an artist who has filled this whole world like a huge art gallery with his creations. He wants us to enjoy those things and look into their design and their mysteries and the esoteric aspects of all that. But he doesn't want us to worship those things or focus our attention on those things. He wants to get credit as the benign creator of all things for what he has made and have us turn our love and our attention, especially our simple childlike trust toward him, saying to him, Lord, I know that you are the great creator and the communicator, but I also know that you're the lover of my soul. And Scripture says out of love, a simple, compassionate love, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believe in him should not perish, but have eternal life. Out of love, Jesus came down knowing he would be subjected to rejection, ridicule, and final humiliation and terrible blinding pain by being crucified in order to reconcile his wayward creation back to himself and to his Father. And so what we have to realize is that there are lots of conceptions of God. There are pantheistic conceptions, New Age conceptions, animistic conceptions, all kinds of ideas about God. But what Christianity and the old Hebrew religion told us is that God is an awful lot like we are, and we are like him. We are made in his image.
Indeed. And we will be right back after this very short break, folks. You're listening to the Reverend Ted Pike on The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face.
That's right.
Respect our right to live here on the land.
There's only one race. It's the human race. And we're all members of it, apparently. Our very special guest is the Reverend Ted Pike. Now, switching gears a little bit here, Ted. We wanted to talk about how much control the state of Israel is able to lord over the foreign policy of the United States. What's your perspective on this?
Well, certainly, as the scholars Mearsheimer and Walt pointed out several years ago in their classic book, The Israeli Lobby, the power of the Israeli lobby in Washington, power over Congress, power even over the presidency and advisors to the president and so on is absolutely staggering. And certainly whenever Israel misbehaves in the Middle East, such as Gaza invasion several years ago, such as the flotilla attack and so on, you can expect that that Washington is either going to respond with silence if it says anything, it will be extremely cautionary, it will be extremely mild. Certainly Obama said nothing critical of Israel for their outrageous attack, killing 9 nine Turkish peace activists last spring. So the subject of Jewish control, Zionist control in Congress is one that's been very long standing. One of the characteristics of Jewish supremacists is to basically go after the governments of the nations, the legislative bodies, sparing no expense and no effort to get control of kings, the monarchs, the governing forces in this world. Because if they can do that, it largely through the power of money, through the power of loans and entanglements of that kind, then regardless of what the masses, the people, may say in objection, nevertheless, when you have the power of government, the police, in our case, the FBI, the Justice Department, and so on, backing them up, then they're in for a long stay.
And it appears that, and even according to Fox News, that telecommunications companies within the United States that are owned by Israeli interests are, in fact, monitoring communications within America and reporting it back to Mossad.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the truth is, in fact, my niece, Harmony Dawes, and I wrote an article probably 6 months ago about the fact that the major communications companies in the United States have been involved with the government in monitoring under the pretext of homeland security and in preventing terrorism, monitoring private conversations now for years. The FBI certainly has the right to listen anytime they want to here in America to anything we have to say. In fact, I did call the FBI and I asked the lady, the receptionist, right off. She says, I said, I hear you can listen in anytime. And she said, oh, we're too nice to do that. And I said, no, you can do it. And I pinned her down and she had to admit, yes, Big Brother can now listen in. But the really ominous thing is that our telecommunications are rooted to several very powerful and sophisticated communications companies in Israel, and they have the ability to listen to literally every conversation practically on the planet at the same time, and to key in certain words in facts which might cause them to have take a deeper interest in which is being said. And I certainly would say if you use the term Zionist conspiracy or Jewish threat or things like that, it might cause the ears in Tel Aviv to perk up.
And, of course, there is the founder of WikiLeaks who said that he was sick of the 9/11 truth movement, who indeed, Gordon Duff from Veterans Today, came on this show and broke out that he is indeed Mossad supported as well. In fact, they edit the leaks before they go out, and interestingly enough, no leak has ever come out that is critical of Israel.
Yes, yeah. Well, you can write the script on that. Yes, it is extremely ominous, the fact that privacy now has become virtually extinct, certainly in the telecommunications systems of the world, and you cannot begin to presume that any conversation is private. This is almost coming to a head here in the United States. My niece again wrote a very good article several days ago about the fact that I believe it's on December 21st that Julius Genachowski, who's the head of the Federal Communications Commission of the United States government, will be presiding over a decision made by the five members of the FCC as whether to start bringing about broadband diversity and so on, ending the equality of communication and transmission of the internet, beginning to move toward giving these big companies you were talking about a special rights to faster, more commercialized internet versus the more archaic internet that the rest of us will be on. And of course, most people are going to go the fast lane and so on. And there's also the another top official in the Obama administration in control of communications. I forget exactly the office he holds. His name is Sunstein, and
Sunstein.
He is working rapidly, very vigorously to basically create a curricula for information sharing in the media. On the internet, and as well as radio and television, which the government will require approval for programming. It will require that a certain diversity, unexpected topics, racial and ethnic and counterculture topics be discussed along with whatever programming the broadcaster might prefer. And
For FC's sake. Well, thanks very much, Ted, for coming on the show with us today. His website, ladies and gentlemen, is truthtellers.org. That's truthtellers.org. And also, you can listen to this show again on the archives of the Vinnie Eastwood Show before we go to air tomorrow. Coming up, hour number two, more information and more fabulous comedy. We'll be right back, folks. Some information to make you laugh out your laughing hole. Yes, indeed. All right. It's going to come back. All right. Now, fabulous articles always popping up on Guerrilla Media and they're sent to us by what I call my moderately fabulous associate producer, Chris, in the UK, who is indeed helping us to get some guests from the UK. And it turns out that the international globalist bankster scumbags have an international, non-globalist, non-bankster, awesome cats network prepared to come on the air with us here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show from England, from New Zealand, from America, and from various other countries around the world to talk about how they're not going to submit and will resist. This is the great thing that I find about the banksters, is that they've decided to come up with a global system, and as a result, they're ticking off absolutely everybody the whole world round. And I don't think anybody who's ticked off the entire world has stayed in power for terribly long. Unless, of course, they have an enormous scientific dictatorship and can exterminate everybody before they can resist. Which they do.
And make about 20 levels of separation between them and you in a world of 6 levels of separation.
Exactly. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, the lighter side of losing the fight against the New World Order and getting totally exterminated. Now, speaking of getting exterminated, this one from Guerrilla Media, Eurozone needs Undertaker. It's an article we copied out of the Daily Telegraph. The EU's Franco German Diktore and the European Central Bank, but have between them ruled out all plausible solutions to the Eurozone's debt crisis. Even if Angela Merkel were to agree plans that amounted to a European debt union, the scheme would still be torn to pieces by the German Constitutional Court. There will be no Eurobond, no increases to the EU's 440 billion euros, which is about 368 billion pounds sterling, rescue fund, and no mass purchases of Spanish and Italian bonds by the ECB. Nothing. The system is politically and constitutionally paralyzed. Spain and Portugal will be left nakedly exposed before their funding crunch in January. Now, hopefully, some good can come out of this, because in every crisis, of course, just like, what was his name? Well, guy says that you can't waste a crisis.
Rahm the Cruel Emmanuel.
Oh, yeah. You can't waste a crisis. And truthers can't waste a crisis either, because whenever big conspiracies or terrible stuff starts happening, we have the ability to comment and expose it before it gets too bad, so that people know what is coming. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. This is Barack H. O'Berry's theme song. The Godfather, Barack H. O'Berry. I wonder if he's ever listened to or even heard of an episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I hope he has. I hope we know that he's a criminal, bankster-funded scumbag who's an illegitimate president who's just working to destroy the United States Constitution bit by bit, tearing it up as if it's a worthless piece of paper. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future, broadcasting from New Zealand. We have a very special guest for you, ladies and gentlemen. She's been on the show before, and always enjoy having her on. Her name is Lauren Moray, and she is an expert researcher on a number of different issues, particularly radiation. And she's just been on the Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory Show talking about water being sold to China from the United States. Lauren, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie. It's always fun to be on your program. Thank you.
Well, I used to be a salesman, and in sales they tell you that when you're on the phone with a smile, people can hear it, and I can certainly hear a smile on your dial.
Always.
Always. Now, speaking of really happy things that make you smile, you're talking about fertility rates being reduced. Tell us about that.
Well, on the Jesse Ventura program, that particular segment, that's the second season of that program, that series, it's called Great Lakes Water. And what we discussed was the theft of water from the United States by China and the Nestle Company, an international corporation, and also the contaminants in drinking water and the public health effects of those contaminants, such as depleted uranium from the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yugoslavia. And then we also discussed bottled water, and I hope that people who are listening will look at your website where you have this interview posted, and they can actually watch it. The problem with bottled water is that, first of all, bottled water is primarily just plain old tap water, which you can turn your tap on and just fill up your glass or a pitcher or whatever and drink it. You can also filter it or put a reverse osmosis filter on it, and that's all the water companies do is filter it, and then they put it in plastic bottles, and they charge you 10,000 times more for a bottle of water than it would cost you to simply turn your tap on and filter it and drink it. Now,
and people are still silly enough to buy it. And what was his name? Lewis Black, the comedian who's featured on, I believe it's the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He did a comedy piece called Rules of Enragement. In it, he talked about how the United States government previously had the opportunity to spend money cleaning its water and making sure that it was safe to drink as it came out of the taps, but instead of doing that, they gave the water over to Pepsi and Coke, because if anybody knows water, it's Pepsi and Coke. And you know what these water bottles are? It's a guy in Pittsburgh filling them up in his bathtub.
Sure. And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which is a government agency, actually tested 25 different brands of bottled water. And most of them exceeded the EPA drinking water standards in terms of contamination from mercury, thallium, and thorium. Thorium is a radioactive substance. These three contaminants, how in the world did they get in bottled water? They damage the liver and kidneys, and they cause cancer of the lungs and the pancreas. Now, Nestle Water Corporation has built a global industry, I would call it a natural industry, that most people have for free in their own homes. But they've turned it into an $8 billion a year industry. Billions and billions and billions of dollars of money go in the U.S. to bottled water. They produce, I'm trying to think of how many bottles. 50 billion bottles a year.
Whoa!
200 billion plastic bottles a year. That's the main drawback. And another problem is the Goethe Institute in Germany, it's a scientific institute, analyzed the plastic in water bottles, and they discovered estrogenic chemicals. In other words, they damage and alter the reproductive functioning in male and women. So it's what is this industry really about? It's not just about making a lot of money. It's also about poisoning us. So it sort of goes along with globally contaminating the world's water with depleted uranium. And I can tell you, Jesse Ventura was really shocked. He was very shocked, and he was very, very disturbed by the issues we covered. Now, the bottled water industry, Nestle is primarily targeting the U.S., Mexico, China, and Brazil. And they've now gone into Pakistan as well, and they introduced bottled water, but they're using it as a gateway to introduce Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and Evian water. Now, there are also chemicals, not just in the plastic bottles, but in the sweeteners that they use in Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and other soft drinks that are also very damaging to the human biological system. So, Vinny, what's your conclusion?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, almost every single corporation that sells any description of product en masse is quite likely owned and controlled by interests that have no interest whatsoever in the good health of their customers. Coca-Cola, in particular, I was told by a good friend of mine who's a filmmaker here in New Zealand, when it comes off the ships, they import the syrup rather than importing bottles of Coke, and it's bottled here in New Zealand, but the syrup comes off the ships. And on a range of 1 to 6, 6 being the most toxic chemical that if you breathe it, one breath of it will kill you, make you flop around on the floor like a fish out of water for a moment before you die, and 1 being, you know, you can drink it, you can bathe in it, it's water, the chemical classification for Coca-Cola syrup is 6. and you have to wear a chemical suit with a breathing apparatus on a tank before you can go anywhere near it because it is so risky. Now, considering that, they have no concern about the public because instead of, you know, instead of getting that kind of toxicity removed, they instead just water it down with fluoride the water, of course, from the municipal drinking facilities that we have here in New Zealand, and then bottle it in plastic bottles which feminize men and cause breast cancer in women, and then sell it to us at a rate that is ridiculously expensive comparative to how much it costs to produce this toxic substance.
That's correct. Now, another thing that's happened is you mentioned fluoride. Yes. They are adding fluoride to drinking water in the U.S., in New Zealand, and other countries. But before that, they use chlorine supposedly to disinfect drinking water supplies. But anywhere that chlorine is present, if you're burning waste and there's chlorine in it, it forms dioxins. If you're chlorinating water and there are other chemicals present, the chlorine forms dioxins. Plastics are full of dioxins, and the breast milk, the highest dioxin levels in the world in breast milk, this is what you're feeding newborn babies, is in Japan. And if anybody listening has been to Japan, you're aware that everything is wrapped in pretty plastic and cellophane and sometimes two or three layers of plastic to protect or to present to sell food in. Now, that's why Japanese women have the highest levels of dioxins in their breast milk in the world.
That's quite a surprise, because Japan seemed to be quite onto it in other areas. They don't fluoridate, as I understand. I don't even know if aspartame is widespread there, and they're quite into using blue and green algae health substitutes also.
Yeah, but I've been on 20 speaking tours to Japan since the year 2000, and the donut shops are sneaking in. The carbonated beverages are sneaking in, the French fries, the McDonald's, the fast food. It's all sneaking into Japan, which is a terrible shame because they have one of the very most nutritious and healthiest diets in the world.
Isn't it so sad, you know, that these corporations can pose as the good guys and they can just slide into town and they use youth a lot of the time. Sadly, they just use dumb idiot kids as a platform of popularity in which to force themselves into a market where they can compete very well, in fact, outcompete existing sources of locally produced food. And then you've got to be some sort of weirdo extremist like me and Vinny and yourself if you want to resist and actually have any chance of throwing these guys out of town. We haven't even got a chance of doing that, but you know, we're the weirdos. So they can start selling poison, dress it up in fancy adverts on TV and make it look cool. And we're the weirdos because we're against poison. Because ultimately, it comes down to public education, doesn't it?
I believe
in a free market. So.
I was just going to say maybe Nestle would call us weirdos, but actually we're educators.
The average person calls us weirdos. Don't worry, not just Nestle.
And by
well, their pre-programmed brainwash response is,
Well, there's another thing that they're adding to drinking water now. It's called lithium, and lithium is a chemical, it's actually a metal that is used by people who are manic depressive or bipolar to flatten out their mood swings and make their lives more livable. Especially,
don't they also make toxic batteries out of them? Maybe
yes.
They're just putting it in the water supply to give us more energy.
Well,
are you biased, Vinny? Are you discriminating against the Ever Ready Bunny?
Well, let me tell you what lithium does. Lithium in biological systems damages the endocrine system. The endocrine system is what sends the information molecules, or it's the information pathway that goes all over your body and synchronizes and syncopates the processes in the body that have to happen in a very structured way, sequences and so forth. So the effect of lithium is to cause primarily thyroid problems.
Coincides with a huge amount of thyroid cancer increases as well, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. And thyroid problems cause weight gain, and they cause hair loss. In for people who are exposed to lithium and develop thyroid problems, 50% of the disease of the thyroid is goiter.
Goiter
is caused by hyperthyroidism, an excess of iodine production.
Goiter is actually an absence of iodine. And that happens, for instance, in the Himalayas to mountain populations who are not near the sea, and they don't get proper levels of iodine. So their thyroids grow absolutely huge, and they have huge, big lumps on the sides of their throats where the thyroid is, because it's not functioning properly.
You mentioned thyroidism. Well, right next to the thyroid, you've got above the brain stem, you've got the thyroid, the thalamus, or hypothalamus, and the pineal glands. And all three of those are attacked by fluoride, because fluoride naturally bonds with iodine, having opposite polar charges. They form a compound. And that's why the fluoride is known to calcify the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is thought to, and the pineal are thought to be highly necessary for dream state functions and lateral thinking. And this is why the Nazis related that to resistance, an actual dangerous anti-government thoughts.
And that's why the Nazis put fluoride in the drinking water of the slave camps.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it attacks your whole endocrine system, which is your whole sleep regulation, hormone regulation, ultimately.
That's correct. And also,
what gives these governments the right?
Also, the thyroid sends signals to a pregnant mother's brain, and that her brain controls the development of the brain in the developing fetus. So when you when you do dental x-rays on a pregnant woman, even though you put an apron over her body, the thyroid is not covered or protected from the x-rays. And dental x-rays on pregnant women, there are published papers on it, cause brain damage to the developing fetus. So the endocrine system is extremely important, not only for the adult or the child, but it's even more important for the developing embryo, the developing fetus. The developmental stages are when the worst damage is done that can possibly be done. And whatever happens to a developing embryo in utero affects the health history of that organism for the rest of its life.
Oh, yeah, but this is just a conspiracy theory. We can't prove it. The endocrine system is a conspiracy theory, too. just got to love government and corporations and all be dumb suckers who watch sports all day.
That's right. And if anybody disagrees, don't listen to them. Listen to the corporation that profits from the diseases that they manufacture. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, our very special special guest is Lorraine Murray. Coming up after the break, we're going to get into the airports and some various other fabulous topics. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Our very special guest is Lorraine Murray, joining us for the duration of this hour. Now, switching gears here a little bit, on from the Jesse Ventura Show, you've been going into a bit of studies regarding fertility, and I've just had a look at these... what are they called? These slides here about the post-socialist fertility change in Central Europe, Baltic countries, post-Soviet countries, and Southeastern Europe, and the fertility rates just go right on down. How did that happen, Lauren?
Well, the graph that is posted on your website that you're referring to is the decline in fertility between 1980 and 2000. That's a 20-year period. And the average fertility for for Europe and even Russia and the post-Soviet countries, it was about 2.2 or 2.3 children per woman. And by 1986, it was at a high point over the last 5 or 6 year period. And that was 1986 is when Chernobyl happened. And from then on, Chernobyl was the kickoff for a really, really steep decline from 2.2 or 2.3 children per woman for the whole European, South Europe, Central Europe, the Baltic countries, and then the post-Soviet countries, including Central Asia. And the fertility declined after Chernobyl in 1986 to about 1.2 or 1.3 children per woman by the year 2000. That is called a catastrophic drop. That's about 100% drop in just 15 years. That is catastrophic, and it has to be an environmental cause when it's over such a large region. And as we know, ionizing radiation is devastating to fertility, to the developmental stages of the unborn post-fertilization. And the decline in fertility in Asia and, in Europe and the post-Soviet countries has to be due to ionizing radiation. And the reason I say that is because we have actually now have government measurements in the atmosphere of uranium levels in England from 1998, actually up to the present, and I can send those graphs to you to post with this information. And I also made a graph of the Los Angeles drinking water uranium levels, which the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power have been measuring and reporting in their annual reports since 1999. And in the British atmospheric monitoring, the uranium levels peaked at dangerous levels during Tora Bora bombing in 2002 in Afghanistan. That was following 9/11. And in the 2003 attack on Iraq. And it's also very high in the Los Angeles drinking water. And that graph, the data for the Los Angeles drinking water, uranium levels are reported through 2009. And you can actually see huge increases that are related to specific battles such as Fallujah, Mosul, Najaf, al-Sadr. The battle in al-Sadr, which is a suburb of Baghdad, the military has called the biggest military battle since Vietnam.
Yeah, so, I mean, it'd be interesting to know if Auckland or New Zealand municipal water supplies had levels of uranium in the morning.
Oh, it does. And,
do you give us that information at all?
Oh, yes. I have a lot of information. I'm writing a war crimes complaint right now. And I did a whole section on Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania because I was able to go through military websites and military soldiers' blogs and chat rooms and so forth with Peter Eyre, who is a colleague of mine. He was in British intelligence and was based part of his career at NATO headquarters. He said, I hate depleted uranium. I'm glad he does because he's a professional meteorologist and he made all kinds of airflow charts from me from a official government airflow data that is used to make pilots' flight plans with. So it has to be accurate. And he was also a Middle East oil and gas consultant, so he's been invaluable in helping me get the information and the airflow data that I need to prove that what I'm saying is absolutely correct. And there's just more and more data rolling in and more evidence, just like this graph today.
This could be the sort of bombshell we need to wake some fluoride heads up down here because, you know, we've got these people who are like, you know, I think the biggest problem in New Zealand ever was the fact that a bunch of French agents came here in 1981, was it, and blew up the Rainbow Warrior Greenpeace vessel down here and because of their anti-nuclear stance. And then we had a leftist prime minister who platformed on the basis of being against nuclear weapons and nuclear-powered American military vessels being able to come in our waters. So if we could show that there were radioactive isotopes in municipal water supplies, we could create a bit of a firestorm here, an unnecessary firestorm.
And
during that banning of the nuclear material for a full 20 years, Australian mining companies were shipping yellow cake uranium through not less than 3 New Zealand ports.
Not only that, there's more to it. What Peter and I did was to go through U.S. military websites and also official Australian military websites. We also went through the soldiers' blogs, as I mentioned. Now, the United States and Australia, Departments of Defense or Ministry of Defense, have absolutely insisted and completely denied that they were using any depleted uranium in Australia. Now, about 1995, Australia, or maybe a couple years younger, Australia doubled their uranium mining and uranium milling activities annually. And the result of whatever was happening in Australia in 1995 is that the Tasmanian devil, which is a marsupial that only lives on Tasmania unless it's in a zoo in other countries, the population began to crash, and it's declined 70% already just since 1995. The The evidence.
Greenpeace don't care about that, do they? Greenpeace don't do anything about that.
But
that's the difficulty with environmentalism. I mean, the climate change environmentalist support network has seemed to eclipse real environmentalism. Real environmentalism is supposed to be about clean water, clean food. They don't give two flying F's about it anymore.
Well, it's been hijacked. Do you know who funded and started the environmental movement in the United States? The Rockefellers.
Oh, that sounds about right.
And so what it always is controlled opposition. They infiltrate every sincere movement. They hijack it. They have more money than anybody else. And then they put whoever they want in the key positions, and they control it with the media, which they own. So no wonder.
And the only thing more powerful than money is knowledge, and this is where people need to step up, and this is the only solution. We can't expect the government to provide the solutions to food and water safety.
Actually, a Manhattan Project scientist taught me everything I know about radiation. He's 90 years old this week, and he actually solved the problems on the hydrogen bomb. It took him 10 years to tell me that. His name is Marion Falk. And what he told me very early on, when I went to his home and sat down at the table with him, and we would have another Plato day under the tree, like the ancient Greeks, discussing the philosophy of science. He just taught me so much. And in the very beginning, he said, "I just want you to remember something. All governments are terrorist organizations."
And it's a shame that we don't have a real war on terrorism, because if there actually was, the people would be surveilling their government, and the government people would be getting arrested, being held without trial and that kind of thing, getting frisked as they walk through airports and whatever. But no, you can't have that. No.
I mean, people think we're being extreme.
The problem is that our governments have said, sit back and leave the driving to us. And
yeah, they can say it. They can say it. The problem is
a bottle of fascism whiskey in their hands while they turn the wheel in a 360 degrees direction, pulling donuts in the middle of a blimmin' information superhighway, threatening to crash everything we know and live for and fight for. You know, the government is so tyrannical in every single sense of the word that it's just unbelievable that anybody would ever conceive of giving them any credence, ever.
Exactly, but
doesn't get excited and talk like this, though. People think it's just a benevolent hand, a helping hand. They think that if there were any conspiracy, too many people would be involved, too many people would see it, there'd be too many whistleblowers. And so they have this faith in imperfect people who are largely corrupted and part of the same groups and organizations and cabals. And I say, Loren, the problem isn't that government says you need to sit back and let us do the driving. The problem is people sit back and let them do the driving.
Well, the problem is that the media and Hollywood and the technologies today have got people so distracted and lobotomized that they've forgotten what is real. And they are not aware of what is happening to them. I mean, we're all crabs or lobsters in a pot on the stove. The heat's been being slowly turned up, and people don't really notice it. But instead of my philosophy now, since I've been doing this for 10 years, is not to talk about what people aren't doing. It's to talk about what the government is doing, and to empower people with information like we're putting out today and like you've posted on your website, that people can go and read more about if the references are with it, and I always put lots of references. And it's extremely empowering, because then they start realizing they're being betrayed by their own leaders and corporations and so forth and so on. And they begin to act very effectively all on their own, and they find all kinds of ways to protest or counter this deception. And it's really surprising how energetic and positive and active they get. And it's because they don't have the information.
Well, I know, but some of them are just too far gone. They're burned out. They, even if they could care enough to listen or read something, to listen to or read something, I mean, they can't even read. All these people, it's just sad. They, it's too far gone, if you ask me. But
well,
we're trying to get up on that side. That's all.
It's not really too far gone. I have a little story.
The Senate has passed legislation to destroy existing whistleblower rights, and it's just so terrible. Our very special guest is Lauren Murray on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back, folks. And welcome back, friends, countrymen, Russians! You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Our very special guest is Lauren Murray. Now, one other element that we wanted to cover here was radiation levels in U.S. airports. Lauren, what have you got to talk about us with this today?
Well, that's about the airport scanners. I just wanted to mention for a minute what the uranium in the drinking water globally is causing. It's causing male populations to shrink and female populations to expand. So the ratio of newborn baby boys to 100 newborn baby girls should be about 104. But in some countries, that has declined because of radiation exposure of the population to the number of baby boys being in the 80s and 70s per 100 baby girls born. Another thing that's happening in some populations, such as fish populations, the male fish, after they hatch or they're born in contaminated waters in the U.S. and in England, the males change to female fish. And this has been widely reported around the U.S. Another phenomenon is that it's called intersex. This is reported in human and animal populations, in polar bears in the Arctic, in fish all over the U.S., except in the Yukon River in Alaska, which is still clean, and in human beings. And what is happening is that when you look at reproductive tissues in these animals and humans, there are male reproductive sex cells in the tissue right next to female reproductive sex cells. So, for instance, you can see, if you look at the tissues with a microscope, you can see sperm-producing cells right next to ovums or the eggs that should only be in females. And a very good human example is the hermaphrodite runner. Her name is Caster Semenya, from northern South Africa, who was running for the Olympics a year ago. And she was winning all the gold medals, so people said, check her testosterone. We have to test her. Maybe she's a man. And when they tested her urine, the testosterone levels were higher than normal, but they were not out of the range that are found in women. So then they said, well, let's look at her internally. And she had internal testes instead of ovaries, and she had no uterus. But other than that, she was female. And what's very strange is that until 1999, gender testing was mandatory for female athletes at the Olympics. But those screenings were dropped. And one of the reasons for eliminating the screenings was that not all women now have standard female chromosomes, and that means that it's also true for males. So they are truly changing the sexuality, the reproductive future, and the products of reproduction globally, and most people don't even know it.
Yeah, it seems that way. Sooner or later, we'll all wind up being like Mr. Gaga.
Yes.
Well, look, I've heard some weirdo New Age occultists say, look, man, it's just because of 2012, we're returning to our androgynous original form. Because this is the actual drive. If you look at the Statue of Liberty, this is the drive of the occult. The Statue of Liberty given to the U.S. by French Freemasons. This is the drive of the occult. But can you explain in a scientific way, why is it that when people suffer from this irradiation, we're seeing less males and a return to female form in some animal species? Why is female the radiation default?
Oh, it's not. The females have male sexual attributes. For instance, in a population of polar bears in the Arctic, they got just wonked with radiation from the Russian hydrogen bomb tests that were done in the Arctic, and now all this depleted uranium is being carried across the Atlantic.
Why specifically were male fish turning female, though?
Well, it's because of the particular way the particular effect or the chemical change that the uranium has on the estrogen and other hormones. In the females and the males.
And that's why not so many male, you cited like 80.
Well, another reason is that the females have the XX chromosome, which is much stronger chemically and physically because they're similar. And the males have XY, which is a more fragile chemical bond. And so when they're exposed to ionizing radiation, particularly in the first 2 or 3 weeks, in my studies, 80% of the fertilized eggs are rejected by the body or they're reabsorbed. And the males are more fragile than the females in that three-week period post-conception. And then after that, the fetuses survive, they live, but they are terribly damaged during the development of limbs, and it's called organogenesis for about...
That's why in general populations we see more females, an increased likelihood of female births towards the equator due to radiation, is that not right?
Well, it's actually where the weather rains out or snows out the radiation. And now, since the uranium war started in Iraq in 1990, it's in the monsoon regions where the radiation is rained out. And
okay.
in the waters, too, the rivers and the lakes and bodies of water.
Thanks, Lauren. Thanks for explaining.
Yes.
Thanks for coming on the show with us again. The archives, ladies and gentlemen, are available at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and you can listen to them in high quality, commercial free at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Pass them out to your friends, and if you have a website of your own, put a little link to us, as they have done at TheWatchman.fm. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Lauren, thank you very much for coming on. Great job, crew, and we will see you again tomorrow.